Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
Attention. 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 Do I have everybody's attention now? Burn it
down! This is the In My House Pro Wrestling Podcast.
Finally!
Scotty Villa brings you your new favorite pro wrestling podcast.
There is nothing you could do that is more dangerous than wrestling CM Punk.
He's got the latest in covering all of the major promotions in professional wrestling.
Austin 316 says I just whipped your ass.
Breaking news and hot topics, he's covering everything from Monday night till Sunday night's main event.
I'm the hottest thing in professional wrestling. I'm Dr. Britt Baker.
And we never forget to go old school.
I was rowdy before rowdy was cool.
From the golden era.
The irresistible force meeting the immovable object.
To the attitude era.
And if you're not done with that, Philly's got two words for ya.
To the revolution.
It's about the 14 years it took me to go from undesirable to un-goddamn-deniable.
And everything in between.
Superkick Hotel!
This is your pro wrestling podcast. This is In My House.
Give me a hell yeah!
Welcome to my
Welcome everyone to the In My House Pro Wrestling Podcast. The gang is all here. It is Scotty Villa, Monday Night Mike, UK Tom. Guys, we are here and we've been waiting for this show. We really, really have. Last week, the Mr. McMahon documentary dropped on Netflix and we all crushed it to be prepared for this show. And it's... Guys, I don't think it landed as big as... Netflix may have hoped. It probably landed the way that the WWE had hoped, where it just kind of happens and people talk about it for a day or two, then the world just kind of moves on. So I'm excited to get into this because I think there's a lot more that you can really get into than people are saying, because there's no like groundbreaking developments on this pod.
What were people expecting?
People are expecting everything. They were expecting the real Vince McMahon, the human being, the horrible human being that he is. That's what they were expecting.
Then people are fucking idiots.
Like, I mean, people saw the opening to episode 6. You got the real Vince McMahon.
but like Vince said himself, like in the first, 4 minutes of the documentary, he was like, I'm not telling you much.
Yeah.
Netflix paid $160 million for not much.
I mean, they've spent way more on worse things.
Yes.
So that's whatever.
Mike, I just want to jump on what you'd said at the very beginning of episode 6, where Vince is just talking to the producer guy. I said this, I think almost immediately to Mike, and I've said this to anybody that's brought it up. I said, what Vince says at the beginning of episode 6 tells me the exact human being that he is.
It tells everyone everything that you thought he was, especially amongst the allegations. Like, I mean, he can call it out to like, they showed what they wanted to show. They're like, you said that.
Yeah.
This came out of your mouth. The most ludicrous statement. Scott, we'll cut the audio in here.
I have it's not two different brains. I have like computers in my head. And sometimes they work against me. I have one computer talking to you right now. And there's another one going on with me thinking something completely different. And then there's a third one sometimes. If I wanted to tap into it, I could. And so it's difficult for me sometimes to pay attention to things. And it's bothered me through the years because all I wanted to be was just normal. I wanted to fit in. But I deal with it because that's who you are. Just deal with it, Vince. Doesn't matter what you want to be this way or you want to be that way. Here's where you are. You're different. Be different. And, you know, the expression of fuck the world. So that's where I am now.
What's the other brain thinking about now?
Something, having a lot of fun, and it is involving sex.
Exactly. See how crazy that was?
It's as soon as it hit my ears, I'm like, that's the human being. He's a guy that's always thinking about work. He's always thinking about the next step, and he's always thinking about sex. And that's the guy, in my opinion, from what we saw there, which in my opinion is probably the most we've ever seen discussed, talked about, as Vince, the human being, not the character, Mr. McMahon, which I don't need to know about the character, Mr. McMahon. We got all that in the Attitude Era. I feel like Vince loves the business first and everything else is secondary. You might want to put sex at 1B if the business is 1A. Everything else is after that. And that's one of the biggest takeaways I took from this show.
The only person that came out of this documentary looking good was Shane.
Yeah.
Well, I will challenge you a little bit on that.
Tony Atlas?
Don't you say Tony Atlas.
You gotta get Tony Atlas.
The Tony Atlas? Yeah, I'm with you. I think Tony Atlas looked great. Probably the best he's ever looked.
Sleeves optional and everything. No, I'm saying
yeah,
Tony
rip
Atlas
those things
because...
right off before the interview.
The only reason I'm bringing up Tony Atlas is because he was the only one that wasn't afraid to, in my opinion, truly speak his mind on what he thought and felt about Vince in the business when he was there. I think everyone else was still a little bit guarded, but yeah, fully after episode 5, it was very much like, Shane, I love you. We love you. We're proud of you. You'll probably never truly get that moment from Vince because I don't think Vince is that guy. He's not that dad, but we love you, Shane.
Sure. Yeah. Love you, Shane.
I did before you started taking pictures with a fucking Young Bucks.
There we go. That's a whole other show. Whole other show. You got a lot more to bitch about this episode.
Do you want to get right back into Shane, or where do you want to go?
Where do you want to start with it? Because I mean, like, episode one was about his. I mean, UK Tom, our resident wrestling historian. I could probably say the first three episodes. You're just like, well, actually. Maybe did you feel that way about all six episodes, Tom, that you were just like, I know this shit? Because like I also felt like I knew a ton from the documentary.
So there was 10 seconds out of 6 hours where I didn't know what they were talking about.
What was that 10 seconds?
And yeah. that was when Linda said that Vince Sr. initially was going to sell to Gorilla Monsoon.
Okay, so we were questioning this. Scotty and I had talked when I had finished up the doc, and we were wondering if this is something you even knew, but that was news.
Yeah, I didn't know that. But that was literally the only thing in the entire documentary that I had not heard.
So we're going to do this when there's a little bit of... that's it was huge because I never knew that. And instantly I'm going, I wonder if Tom knew that. I wonder if Mike knew that. So it's crazy that you didn't know it. Just as a put this in the back of your brain for now. In a future episode, when things are a little bit slowed down in the world of pro wrestling... That's a hell of a what if. What does wrestling look like in 2024?
If Gorilla,
got the WWF, that with, I'm going to leave it there because it'll be a fun episode. But that to me was a huge thing that that was brought to light, and but he didn't. Vince got it, and then you just see the building of going national and then going global and being there for pay-per-view and broadcast television and Saturday Night Main Event, all that stuff. So yeah, there's not a lot there. We found out a little bit more about Vince's relationship with his dad. We always kind of diehards knew that he wasn't around very much. And when he was, Vince always just wanted to impress his dad and be in the business to be like his dad. So didn't learn a ton there, but you do come to find out some more shit about Vince and his family in episode 5, I believe it is. But is there anything from the first 1, 2, or 3 episodes that's how he got in the business, the golden era and the steroid trials and all that stuff.
The one thing I wanted them to talk about at the early days that they didn't was I still want to know how the hell Vince Jr. managed to buy the WWF with WWF money. How the fuck do you do that?
Well, he, again, the gate still happened. The money was still coming in. It's kind of a classic story for someone like, taking over their father's company.
It's like that's a clever accounting trick to buy it with company money. Like,
well, it's still his. Like, it's going to be his to make the money with, right?
But essentially, the WWE bought itself.
Yeah, kind of.
Pretty much.
I it doesn't compute in my brain.
Yeah, like it's weird because like episode one, Junior, I thought made Vince look the best he looked in the whole doc.
Agreed.
Yes.
And that's like, I mean, shit goes downhill pretty goddamn fast, but but in Junior, like it paints a better picture of the man. And again, we knew when we announced we were going to talk about the doc that this wasn't probably going to be for us. And Tom's thoughts are kind of true. Like this doc, even presentation wise and stuff, like you're the wrestling fan when they're vocal online, they're like, it wasn't enough. I'm like, it's not for you. There's 280 million people who have Netflix, and these shows kind of come out to everyone. Like we're telling that story to the average viewer.
So I watched the whole documentary with a non-wrestling fan.
Mm-hmm.
And his thoughts were, it was too much. Like, he had no idea about the curtain call, but they didn't explain why that was a big deal. So they didn't have the happy medium for the hardcore fans and the people being like, oh, I'll just watch this. They just expected people to know shit without explaining why it was a big deal. Like, obviously, us three were like, oh, yeah, they did the curtain call. That's a fucking big deal. Don't do that. But James was like, well, so what? They do that after, like, basketball games or whatever. Like, why is this a problem? I'm like, because they're not in fucking gimmick. Don't start me.
yeah. Like, I don't want to have to teach you about this. And you're right. Like, they don't go into it in depth. They explain, like,
what kayfabe is.
Yeah, that's it. But you're right. There's not enough there to, like, really get the average fan on board. Like, I mean, the takeaways, I think, for the average fan, obviously, you wait for episode six. Obviously, allegations are a huge one. But within those first three episodes, for us, we're just like, yeah, like, WrestleMania was a big deal.
No shit.
Like, the company needed WrestleMania. So you got that point across. And then everything leading into it, where you're just like, most fans who are watching this are people who dropped off at the Attitude Era, I would assume, who are going to take the chance to hit play on it. I thought that Attitude Era stuff was good.
So the way I've described this podcast to some diehards that haven't watched it yet, I think I even said it to you guys too, was, yeah, you're going to know 90% of the stuff, but a lot of the show is confirming a lot of perceptions about Vince that we just kind of assume, or we, you know, there's, you know, rumor and innuendo, but this shit confirms it. Like when Vince buys the company and we find out how he gets to WrestleMania and then how everything just kind of takes off from there, you start to really find out how much power and influence that Vince McMahon has in the world of pro wrestling and even in outside of it. Like, I don't think you can skip over the fact that Jimmy Snuka killed a woman and Vince said, no, you didn't.
No, you didn't.
Allegedly.
And there's nothing I love more. Me and Scotty laughed about that for 5 minutes straight. Jimmy Snuka allegedly killed someone. And Vince's response was, no, he didn't. And that worked.
And
it worked over police. It worked for everything. Just like, no, he didn't.
Well, I think it's one of my favorite wrestling stories. And it was at the, I don't remember whose trial it was now. But Alpha and Seeker were in the courtroom staring at the jury being like, not guilty.
Yeah.
Not guilty. These fucking scary Samoans. Like, that's going to work.
It does work. You saw the results of the business when it comes to the one ring announcer that was a pedophile and picking up
Matt
the boys.
Phillips.
That was helping the hitting on the boys and
come on, Emmy,
doing stuff where you know, the ring boys are getting hired to set up the ring, but then all of a sudden some terrible stuff's happening as well. One thing that you were surprised about, Tom, that it was even mentioned was the female referee that alleged that Vince had raped her and he paid her off and it went away.
I was surprised they brought that up just because, like, it's a lawsuit, and I wasn't entirely sure how much they were going to go into details about those. Obviously, we knew we were going to talk about Janelle Grant,
Yeah.
but I was surprised with the details with the Rita. But then on the other hand, like the Sable lawsuit, he was like, I don't remember.
Yeah, weird call.
To
Like,
me is
very weird call to say, like, ah, what are you talking about?
well, I'm wondering if it's a Brock Lesnar thing. Like, obviously,
absolutely. I think he's
Sable
trying.
being married to Brock.
I don't think they're worried about that. Like, they straight blasted Brock.
No, I
Well,
think
they
Vince is
didn't.
worried about that.
Yeah, I think Vince is protecting his guy because he at the time he was still working there. He was trying to make sure that Brock's good. I don't remember it, sure, whatever, but they
It's not.
clearly happened on television.
And a lot of money.
Exactly, right? There's the one biggest takeaway from this show for me was Vince McMahon, the guy that contradicts himself. And one of the things that I was just baffled by was when they challenged him on, you know, if it's just business or it's personal, when he raided the territories to get Hogan and Junkyard Dog and all that stuff, it's business. That's just business. But when WCW starts taking their talent and going, heading them over to WCW, he took that personally. And he couldn't, the producer's like, well, what's the difference? Well, one's business and one's personal. And that again is such a telling feature of Vince McMahon, the man, the businessman, where he can't the narcissism, right? Like that's what it is, that Vince can't see that those are it's just that's just business all the way around.
I laughed for about 10 minutes when he said that. I had to pause the show.
It's weird because like they paint a picture too where you're like, damn, like he is a great businessman. But the show does such a good job in the aspect of like, then the XFL happened, then restaurants happened, and you're like, okay, like most who get successful and we want to spread our wings and go across into different avenues. And he failed. And we get the Costas interview, which I absolutely love. Like him getting closer and closer to his face, him even saying he's like, just feel myself getting closer. I'm like, you were kissing him. What are you talking about? You were right in his grill. But it shows that Vince needed to just stay in his lane. And when he realizes that, and then like the man just focuses on the pro wrestling business, sports entertainment, if you will, the benefit was there. The one thing he was good at. But seeing the failure of the XFL. Like, but again, it was exciting to see, like, he hate me. And like seeing some of that early XFL stuff where I'm like, this should have worked, man. Like, something about this could have worked. Like, Slam Ball had a better run than the XFL, and that's sad.
It was on Spike TV though. People love that
But
show.
when they keep calling him the P.T. Barnum, I'm like, yeah, man. Like, give it up to Tony Atlas. It's the greatest booker ever. Like, when he says that, greatest booker of all time. In this day and age, it's a hard thing to argue.
Don't know. Tony Khan is out there.
Oh yeah, there it is.
And
Yeah, UK Tom cutting deep, just going right for
I
AEW.
can't even say that with a fucking straight
Yeah,
face.
but
He's
like
disgusting.
it's what the longevity alone, it's a hard thing to beat. Yeah, your history is it's gonna be tarnished because of, you know, all the allegations and things going around, but we don't have this day and age without Vince McMahon still. And I'm not, again, anyone listening to the pod, I'm not condoning the actions of the man himself. But if you're a wrestling fan, you got to look at Vince and say, fuck, like you're kind of the reason, he's the reason we're doing this podcast. He's the reason the eyes are on the product it is now. Like I asked Scotty, I think the big one is when Vince McMahon dies, he's getting the 10 bell salute.
Ooh, I don't know.
I think he is, man.
I
So
don't know.
we talked on whatever it was Thursday last week, and Mike convinced me. We talked about, because initially I was like, like Tom, I was like, no, there's no way. Talking with Mike, he convinced me. since then, I think I've gone back. Just there's too much recent negative stuff about Vince that I don't see that Hunter would be like, yes, we need to dedicate time to a 10 bell salute to Vince.
Listen, people are still playing Thriller all across the world.
I know.
I
Like
know.
it comes to a point too, like let's say this doesn't get to court. Again, like I'm not defending the man's actions. Let's get out there now before I get murdered on the internet for my takes, but you almost have to.
I
I
see.
don't
Go ahead.
I don't think he gets the 10 bell salute. I do think he gets the graphic. You know, like at the beginning of the show before Raw, they're like, I can't think of who the last person. Oh, Kevin Sullivan. Like
Actually,
this show
it
is.
was Pete Rose. Actually, it was Pete Rose. Got a
What did
graphic
Pete
last
Rose
night.
did he?
Yeah, he died yesterday.
I know he died, but did he get a graphic on Raw?
Yep.
Well, fuck you, Sportsnet, is what I'll say.
Oh boy.
But yeah, well, Pete Rose, like I think he gets the gra I think Vince will get the graphic.
Right
Going
now,
I
back like to
agree.
the doc itself. Outside of graphic and the 10 bell salute, because I mean, there'll be a lot of Vince McMahon news in the coming years anyway.
Yeah.
This is something that's going to be covered for some time.
Yeah, if you're still here.
That there we go.
It's
That's what I'm saying. I mean,
going
yeah, at this rate, man, three computers,
to
three computers. His childhood. I know this was a big one for Scotty. Like, I mean, staying in that junior realm of sexual abuse in the house. Like, we knew there was physical abuse from the stepfather role, but the sexual abuse was the big one that stuck with Scotty Villa.
big time outside of the stepfather. He even mentioned his mother sexually abusing him, and Vince just casually says, you know, like, I'm affected by this. There was, you know, abuse and abandonment and incest and this. And Vince just rolls over, and the documentary just goes on. But I'm like, you don't hear the word incest dropped in a lot of sports documentaries where they just go, all right, and then, you know, then the Attitude Era happened. It tells you so much about the damaged human being that Vince McMahon truly is. I am no mental health expert whatsoever, but in the last 20 years, with general knowledge of trauma and hurt and sadness and depression and all that stuff, that is now just all that information is out there and people are talking about it more openly. Vince needed that. He needs help. He needed someone to open up and talk to and get help. Vince McMahon is the only word I can describe is damaged. He had that kind of childhood where he was abandoned by his father until he was 12, had a stepdad that allegedly abused him, had a mother that allegedly sexually abused him as well. And now you almost have to look at the other side of that, where Vince McMahon is now a father and has a son that has spent his whole life trying to get that pat on the back and I love you and I'm proud of you from Vince. Meanwhile, while Shane is trying to find that, Vince McMahon has created an entire world where multiple men say Vince is a father figure to me. He's like a father to me. He tells me he's proud of me, tells me, he loves what I've done. And all that brings Vince so much joy. That's why he's doing this. That's why he's building these empires so these people can live out their dream and be professional wrestlers, be superstars, be bigger than larger than life, and are getting pats on the back almost every week. Look at the relationship that Vince would have with his top superstars, with Hogan, with Bret, with Undertaker, with Shawn, you know, with Cena, with Stone Cold, with The Rock. But he wasn't giving half of that attention to Shane McMahon.
He's the Wizard of Oz, Scotty. Like, he created his world. He knows what to tell these stars. They're all dollars to Vince. They're all dollars. What keeps it? Some people have ego. Some people you have to baby. Sometimes you have to do this. He knows because he's the Wizard of Oz. He gets that. His own kid, shit, he doesn't know how to do that. Look in the environment he was. His actual blood. I believe a lot of what he tells these superstars, they look up to it, probably also damaged. Let's get real. 80s wrestling, filled with damage. Hell, even into the 90s, a lot of damage. Shit was not good if you were a professional in that time. And I mean, that's touched on a lot. Like, obviously, through the steroid stuff, and like, there's a doctor openly there with just like, here's the bag of whatever you want. Stay on the road for 300 days a year.
I think it comes back down to that stupid cliche of hurt people, hurt people.
You know what? Yeah. I've been hearing that a lot. And you have to almost agree. But in the same breath, too, Vince wanted to line his pockets. And in that time, like, it's him bringing up with like some of the gimmicks and choices and like, yeah, racial stereotypes. He's just like, that was the values and the time. And I'm like, shit, like, you're right to look now in 2024 to be like, wow, you got away with some shit then. You're just like, because you could.
That was,
it's because you could, and solely why it was able to be done. TV was doing just the same as Vince. Not just pro wrestling, everywhere. Other movies, TV, it was happening. So when he said that part, I'm like, ah, you know, I hate to agree with you, but you're right. The values were different. And that's what made you money.
Well, even Tony Atlas says that's the way it was. Like when Tony Atlas says, well, Pat Patterson came by and grabbed my pecker. And the guy goes, the director goes, why didn't you tell Vince? Why didn't you tell somebody? He's like, what's the booker going to do? Like, insinuating that he's just going to replace me with another black guy if
that's
I say
it.
Anything.
That's it. I won't get booked.
And that's the time. Like, that wouldn't fly now, and it shouldn't fly now. And technically, yes, let's be honest, it shouldn't have flown ever, but that's the time that they were living in the 90s, when everything was opening up. And more information about everything is happening. The internet's becoming a thing. Jerry Springer and Howard Stern and sex, drugs, and rock and roll are booming. And young 18 to 35 year old males are just horny and ready to fucking rage. Vince capitalized on that because that's where the entertainment business was going. Video games were bigger. Everything was bigger. So that's just the way it was. And that's what sold. And that's what sold all buildings. You couldn't and wouldn't want to do anything like that today. But like, even now with WWE, you know, inserting a little bit of blood in some of their matches every now and then, like, that's blown us away kind of thing, because we haven't seen that for years. But we're kind of getting into that point where, like, all right, we can experiment a little bit again. It's just another cycle of pro wrestling and another cycle of society where the fans are okay with watching that.
The thing that actually interested me most about Tony Atlas, and it was the Pat Patterson comment, because he did say something to Vince about that. And you remember back in 1990, well, you might not remember, but Tony Atlas came back as Saba Simba.
Mm-hmm.
That was Tony Atlas's punishment for talking against Pat Patterson. So he did say something about it, and he did get punished for it. He had a stupid ass gimmick.
And to this day, he goes, why would I say anything? I don't want to get in trouble from Vince. Like, to this day, he's still got that loyalty to the booker.
And,
you know,
I found it very interesting when Jimmy Hart was like, I got to be cautious. I don't know what they want out there.
And that was the last time we saw Jimmy Hart in the documentary, I believe. I don't think he was on after that.
He wasn't back. Yeah.
So a question that popped in my mind is, Shane finally gets the a hug and the pat on the back after WrestleMania 32, jumping off the cell in the match with the Undertaker. If Shane hadn't come back to wrestling that year, and say he hadn't come back, is he getting that pat on the back from Dad?
No.
Is he getting that hug? No.
No.
See, that's the fucking thing. Shane comes back and gets a monster reaction that I don't think anybody expected. I still remember the day I was driving home from work and Mike called me and said, you'll never guess who showed up on Raw. And I named so many free agents or TNA people at the time. And he's like, no. And then he said it was Shane McMahon. And I was floored. Huge pop. And all Vince did, he didn't say, wow, I'm really happy for my son. He just saw dollar signs. He's like, cool, I can make money off of this. And look what he did with Shane for the next, what, 3 or 4 or 5 years? Shoehorned him into WrestleMania moments and matches. And and that was it, right? Made him a GM of SmackDown. To me, that's just, it's pretty sickening that the only way Vince showed love to Shane was by Shane having to prove himself in the wrestling business. Meanwhile, Stephanie, meanwhile, Stephanie, who really wanted to be in the business and flourished in the business and just kind of followed along and had to build her way from the ground up. Vince, there was no real issues other than he's either my father at one certain part of the day, and then he's my boss at another part of the day, and you know, perform at another part of the day. And that's just the way it was. But she wasn't being tested like Shane was to find that love and affection.
I think there's a more interesting doc after Vince McMahon passes, and I think it's with the family. Because you sit here and say, like, oh, poor Shane. Poor every one of them. Poor Linda McMahon. Poor yeah. Stephanie. Like, I mean, I living in that house alone,
you know,
it's almost, it's Succession, right? Like, it's just that show.
You know, I have zero sympathy for Linda McMahon. Absolutely none.
She's in the know, right?
She could have left at any point.
Yeah,
Shane and Stephanie, Vince can't stop being their dad, but she can stop being his fucking wife.
True. Mm-hmm.
There had to have been some sort of agreement deal with, you know.
I mean, endless money. And if that's the picture to be painted, but you're like, who knows what happened behind their closed doors? I think that's more interesting. But in a doc like this, he's still alive. They're not going to murder him out there, which also, I think, like, go ahead, Tom. Sorry.
Linda McMahon looked fucking awful.
Yeah, she did. How could you not?
She looked like a melted fucking candle.
She really did. You know, plastic surgery at like past 70 years old probably just isn't a good idea. But yeah,
the family, Linda, I think it'd be way more interesting.
Yeah,
I don't think we'll ever get a full blown like. Unfiltered McMahon documentary even after Vince leaves. I mean, they've got grandkids now that's their grandpa. I just don't think it'll ever happen, you know. So would I love it? Sure, I'm curious, absolutely. But I feel like the amount that Shane didn't say tells me so much.
Yeah,
and Steph wasn't in it that much.
No, one of the things that my wife didn't see much of it at all, but she'd mentioned or kind of walked by when Vince came back to the company and Stephanie resigned that same day. She's like, that really happened on the same day. I'm like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, kind of tells you everything you need to know. Stephanie did not want to be there with her dad there now, because I think she knew so much about what was coming, about what was already going on with the allegations. And I fully believe she's like, I can't be part of this because I
distance. Distance, yeah. As far as you can. You're right. Like, it's, if you do want to make the return after, great. But I think the meat and potatoes for the average viewer who are brought in by this, because the allegations, was episode 6, right? And I think stuff like Ashley Massaro was so lightly touched upon.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, all right, like, that's almost, I think, like a good half, if not 3/4 of an episode right there, like, to paint that kind of picture.
The same with Owen Hart.
Yeah. I mean, and it's weird because, like, we all know that, right? Like, the show must go on, like, yeah. that whole story. And it's fucking sad that a man lost power in the venue at one point and did the show 2 days later. One of your people fucking died and you still went on.
That, I think, was actually the hardest part of the documentary for me.
Sure. Yeah, it'll always get you. That story will always get you.
And seeing, like, just his blood all over the ring, and to the part where you can see The Rock looking to get in the ring, and then he sees the blood, and it freaks him out. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, I can't.
So I have seen some contradictions about that on the internet. A lot of people are saying that blood was there from the bloodbath by Gangrel and the Brood on the pre-show.
I believe it probably was, but still,
it's the same corner. It's the same thought. They all saw what happened, but yeah, I have seen that.
And it's like where you can see the Undertaker. That's the closest you ever saw the Undertaker out of character in a ring.
Yeah. Oh, gone. Like that's Mark. Yeah. Like that's not Taker, like, right?
Get me out of this ring.
Yeah. How can we get this job done as fast as humanly possible? Even though you know you're slotted for the time no matter what. Is it dirty that like your approach was just like, we announced it to the home audience. We haven't told the live audience though. That makes it okay. It. You're like, shit.
Vince's explanation of that, it was one of the very, it happened a few times, but I audibly said, fuck you while watching it. Because he talks about it so nonchalantly, it killed me. It absolutely killed me. And then to see Bret Hart have to kind of go into like autopilot to talk about it, because there's other parts of the documentary where you can tell Bret's starting to get choked up and trying to cover it, which is, you know, I like that from Bret, because other than that, he's kind of a grizzly, miserable prick, and we love him for it. But when he talks about Owen and the accident and the death, he's talking very matter of fact to get the point across. And to me, I caught on to that right away, and I was like, fuck, like, that's so shitty that's what he's still having to talk about. But he's not letting anybody forget Owen. But seeing Vince talk so nonchalantly, like, well, the in-house audience didn't see it. It was a blackout. We've all been to live pro wrestling shows. Those blackouts are fucking dog shit. You can see everything if you have a brain. So fuck you, Vince, for that. I hated it. I hated it so much that was his rationale. It was like, oh, it was dark.
It's good for the creators of the doc, because they really painted the picture after Screwjob of like everything surrounding Bret was done to hurt Bret.
Mm-hmm.
So it really enforces that fact. Like, you're going to do this blue blazer gimmick. We're going to make kind of a laughing stock out of you, Owen. All of that to be a jab at Bret. And I mean, it sucks when you watch the doc, because I was like going through again, just like background. But seeing Bret get more choked up over the screw job and that part of his career than his own brother, granted, like, trauma does a funny thing to people when they have to deal with that. And obviously this Owen thing's been looming, but so is the screw job. The screw job choked him up more than talking about his brother. Like, I get it, man. Like, you gave Vince McMahon a lot, a lot. But I think everything tied into it, just being like, If you were associated with Bret, we're going to say fuck you. And we'll treat you that way to hurt him.
Even Vince talking about how him and Martha had settled their lawsuit out of court, but then to come find out that it was an accident because it was faulty equipment, and then Vince sued the company. He's like, yeah, we sued him, got our money back, basically. I was just like, oh, there's no compassion in that, man. Which is ridiculous and wild, because it leads me to one of my next thoughts and one of my biggest takeaways and something I've struggled with for years about Vince McMahon. Does Vince like professional wrestling? Now, I know they went back and he talked about his favorite wrestler that he saw growing up. And that, to me, that was very interesting, because I've fully believed for years Vince hates wrestling. He doesn't like wrestling. He'd rather be in the movie business or the television business or whatever. But essentially, he is in the television business and the pay-per-view business. So that wrestling was just his way of getting there. And it's bothered me for a long time. And seeing the freedoms now that the WWE has with even just the terminology they're using on TV is such a welcome change. I heard an interview with Shawn Michaels the other day, and he said, I always wanted to grow up and be a pro wrestler. And I am a pro wrestler, but he turned out to be a pretty damn good sports entertainer too. So I don't have like this negative connotation of being a sports entertainer, because that's just another way of saying you're a pro wrestler. But I don't think I can truly say that Vince loved professional wrestling, even though he did everything he could for the business to protect it, to ensure that it would last when he was gone. I have this weird conflict with it, on trying to figure that out in Vince's brain.
I think he did like pro wrestling. I don't think he has for a long time.
I mean, he said he hated the term. It's weird because you think like the boys, the quote unquote boys, they love pro wrestling. They wanted to be pro wrestlers. And unfortunately, like to make it to the majors, it was with Vince. And when you get to his world, it's, oh, we're not pro wrestling. You have a skill set, but you will have more. I will make you more. And he did that with a lot of guys. Like, it was less about what you could do in ring. Fucking Hogan, man. He's god awful in ring worker. But Hogan had gifts that could be utilized. Like,
The thing with the sports entertainment and the sports entertainer, it never ever worked outside of Vince's brain. Because, like, even when, like, 10 years ago, if we were going to a CWE show, we'd say we're going to the wrestling. I'm not going to the sports entertainment. I've never said those words outside of just then in my life.
That's a really good point that is just hitting me now, is the experiment of sports entertainment, the label, a complete failure,
Didn't
because
work.
it is. Where no one's ever denied that pro wrestling is sports and entertainment combined, but the terminology of sports entertainment didn't work. Anytime anything ha that happened in the pro wrestling world that TMZ or Entertainment Tonight or USA Today would pick up on, it would be like, pro wrestler does this, heel bad guy pro wrestler says this. It was never a sports entertainer. That's very interesting. That is a massive XFL style failure that the
And
terminology sports entertainment did not pick up.
drove him fucking crazy. There's no doubt about it. Vince hated hearing that when news broke about a wrestler, is that it wasn't a superstar and it wasn't a sports entertainer.
Even superstar, I don't think I've ever said WWE superstar, WWE wrestler, or just a wrestler.
Yeah. And
Well,
that's
it's weird because like sports use superstar.
Yeah.
Like music and movies, like they have those.
It's one of those things though where you if you refer to someone as a superstar, it's almost like a joke or you're being sarcastic. I remember years ago I interviewed Scotty Riggs, WCW wrestler, ECW wrestler, and I don't know why I said it, but I introduced him as, WCW superstar, and he stopped me immediately. He's like, whoa, 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 brother, I'm not a superstar. I'm a pro wrestler. I'm a WCW pro wrestler. I was like, oh yeah, they don't call it superstars unless it's under Vince's umbrella. So interesting. But yeah, that's just that never really picked up. And you do kind of just say it to be a sarcastic dick, like, oh, there's Dolph Ziggler, WWF superstar. It never picked up.
It's tricky to me because, like, again, just back to my point about him being the Wizard of Oz, like how he sees his world, like, is only his way. And it's
Yeah.
only ever going to be his way. It's him coming back, even like he's like, Vince is going to leave. He's back now, like, for the sale of this company. He's gone again for nefariously awful reasons. But he lives in his own world. It's the only thing he has, right? Like,
It's the
it's
only
just
thing
touching on that point more that he loves.
it's the
The
only thing he
only
has
thing he
control
loves.
over.
Like, Paulie said it best, I think. Like, he really summed it up good. He's like, the only thing Vince has ever loved is this business. And it, like, watching the doc, you're just like, yeah, great you got that audio because it's true.
Heyman's always right.
Yeah, gotta give it to my boy, Paulie.
You can look at that though, and if you really kind of break it down, simplify it, the Vince only love the business line is true. I believe that for a fact. The business paid Vince back very well because he's a goddamn billionaire and he has been a couple times over throughout his life to the point where Vince can continue to do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, with whoever he wants. And keep control of his life. There's nothing in Vince's life right now that is out of control outside of the investigation that's going on. And I guarantee you he's not worrying about that until his lawyers say, Vince, we need to talk about this. Other than that, he's doing whatever he wants because he's sold the company, the family company. Again, this is a was a family-owned business for 40-some, 50 years under Vince. And he had control of it all. That's where he was happy. So I just, it's one of those things where I get very like, that's where he's happy, but he never liked pro wrestling. He never loved pro wrestling as an adult.
I think you're right, Scott. I don't think he's sweating this. And did I freeze or did you?
Somebody no, froze. You're good.
No.
I don't think he's sweating this. And the reason for that is I don't think he's going to see the inside of a jail cell ever.
No.
Because if it even gets, if it, and again, like Mike, I am in absolutely no way condoning anything he's ever done or.
How could anything. You?
Like you can't, but he know everybody. It's like Ted DiBiase. Everyone's got a price, and that man has a $12 billion. Are you telling me if he settles with Janelle Grant for $1 billion to make this go away?
It's wild. It could have gone away. He just needed to pay all the rest of that money.
Well, that's exactly it.
Like, I mean, this would have been a non thing. It's insanity that a billionaire a couple times over just had to, you know, pay that agreement money. Sure, you'd be like cover-up money. That's fine. If you paid it, Janelle Grant, again, sorry this all happened to you. Not condoning any of the actions, but
no.
That NDA then sticks.
But also,
all of that sticks when that money is exchanged. And if not, we live in a crazy world where Vince McMahon could sue Janelle Grant.
Yeah,
like, that's how fucking crazy it is we live there. And now for Vince, like, it's so crazy this doc landed when it did, right as the P. Diddy stuff happened. Whatever P. Diddy is doing with all of those major celebrities who went to those parties overshadow the Vince McMahon situation. That's how crazy the cycles in news work, where they're like, oh, this is the story we have right now. Billionaire Vince McMahon gets caught doing this. Diddy got caught doing this. No one's going to talk about Vince McMahon anymore. And you're right. That's where the job comes. Like, hey, here's the money to Janelle Grant. Everybody has a price.
The interesting thing as well is if he'd paid the $4 million or whatever it was, $4 million to Vince McMahon is like us losing a 20.
Yeah.
Like,
that's what he used to buy WCW.
Exactly.
It's gross. It's gross that like the rich have that kind of power to make their problems go away like that. And it's funny that like just hearing Tom say it out loud, like he's not sweating this at all. No. Because he's really not. And that's gross. Like, that's gross.
But one way or another, he knows he's not seeing a jail cell. He'll either buy his way out of it or he'll die.
That's it. There's the only two outs of the situation, right? But in a time now where it's like, no, like, we want to throw the book at these people. Doesn't matter, man, because there's bigger fish to fry than Vince McMahon. Like, you feel for a Janelle Grant because you're just like, a bigger case happened involving way more powerful people. So you're back to being, it's irrelevant. You forget about Mr. McMahon, the crazy villain, which like the documentary hinting at that the whole time, right? Like playing that, he's just like, is he the same as his character? And everyone just like, yeah.
Yes.
The only person who said no was Vince McMahon. And Bruce Pritchard. Let's get into Bruce Pritchard.
Well, Bruce Pritchard is so far up Vince's fucking ass.
Oh, man.
Like
Jesus, have a fucking
man.
Moment, Bruce. Like, you've worked alongside the man. Yes, he did right by your family with your wife's illness. Great.
I mean, and nobody's arguing that Vince hasn't done good things.
Agreed.
Because of course he has. But come on, Bruce.
Like, yeah, I expect more from the people. Granted, like, there are some stars too. Like, I think Taker knew he was going to go and he'll hold back. I think Austin knew.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to, he knows when Brett goes on, he's like, well, I'm fucked anyway. Like the guy's, doesn't like me. Thank God they didn't mention Goldberg. But if there's some guys who worked under Vince where I think they knew, or the ones who get leeway, right? Like I think Paul Levesque, our boy Hunter, handled himself in the exact way he was going to handle himself in that doc. He's in it. I think Sean is a little more loose, but still reserved to protect it. But if you were a guy who like you left on bad terms or was always sullied, like Hogan's just Hogan. Like, don't be friends with Hulk Hogan. If anyone like needed to get the memo, it's just like he's gonna fucking turn on you so fast.
You know,
Arsenio part made it still gets me. He's just like just tell him you did fucking steroids.
It's obvious anyway.
All the guys were just like, I have personally injected Hulk Hogan. Like, well, yeah.
So that led to one of the biggest contradictions of the entire series that people picked up on was Vince telling Hogan, just tell the truth, it'll be easier. Meanwhile, Vince has lied and covered up and is going on right now with so much stuff that he's probably not telling the truth about. So it's just one of the many contradictions that happened during this documentary about Vince McMahon, including the one segment where they just straight up show Vince saying, we didn't do that. And then showing multiple clips of him doing exactly that thing. And for all those wrestlers that were on the show outside of Brett and Tony Atlas, they know where their meal ticket is. Bruce, of course, Bruce still works there. He's still Triple H's right-hand man. Bruce ain't going to say shit. And he's going to be one of the good old boys. Well, that's the pro wrestling business, no matter what it is. What's that? Oh, he did what on her face when they were having a multiple person situation? That's the wrestling business. That's Bruce Pritchard.
Yeah.
It's you keep those people out of it.
You
have to get everyone, but if they use Bruce quite a bit.
They did. I loved Bruce in there for the fact that they had him in there. Vince or Bruce didn't hold back, and then they brought him back at the beginning of this year for the last episode. And Vince said, yeah, it was what I thought. You guys did a hit piece on Vince. It was a hit piece. And they put it in there. They weren't scared to put that in there. And they let Bruce say his piece about, this is what Vince McMahon did for me and my wife and my family. But then you still followed up with, well, there's still all these allegations about what Vince did. And it balances that out, right? Which basically just leads to what everyone kind of knows, thinks about Vince, and probably a majority of people. Everyone's got a good side and a bad side. And this was exposing or shining a brighter light on more of the bad side of Vince McMahon, which is kind of what they told us they were going to do.
But they didn't, like, the thing I think people wanted the answers for was the allegation stuff. But, and I think it's still like much like Tom's issue with, like, again, and anyone who's a wrestling fan watching the doc, it's all stuff you knew when that story broke.
We all read that lawsuit.
for the true In My House Pro Wrestling Podcast faithful, I had a different name on this podcast.
Yes, he did.
So when I like, I mean, it's so weird because, like, that's one where someone I know is watching it and she is basically watching because of that information is what she knows. Like, when are we getting to that? It was funny when she's just like, I heard about kayfabe. I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay. So, like, it's teaching something, right? Like, so, it's giving an insight to the business. It's just, I think if it was truly the hit piece, like, Vince, this is all common knowledge. Those first, like, hell, all six episodes is stuff you can find already.
Very easily.
Very,
very easily.
So it's one of those things for me where I'm very much like, we know that if there's an active investigation going on, nobody can really say shit because anything you can say can and will be used against you in a court of law. So no one's really going to open up, especially with an ongoing investigation on, I believe, both sides of that lawsuit. So anyone expecting Janelle Grant to show up or her lawyer or Janelle Grant's friend who exposed a lot of this, that to me, that's ridiculous. I think knowing that we've got the people that broke this story, the reporters that broke the story, because they got the tidbits and the fact that they were blown away by the details after all the shit they've seen. And trust me, I work in a newsroom. You see and hear a lot of shit that you just kind of have to go numb to just do your job. To me, that shouldn't be just thrown in there of like, yeah, it wasn't enough. It's a lot. It really, really is a lot to have those people come out and say, there's details in this that I was disgusted and blown away by that I've never seen before with what we've seen. We see it all the time because we're on the internet all the time. And this is the Vince McMahon world kind of thing, right? So we know it, but you can't just throw it out there that this was a fluff piece kind of thing and didn't live up to the hype, because we all hyped it up ourselves. Netflix put out a great trailer to get everybody hyped up about it. And
they just announced it. That's it for me. They're like, we're doing a talk series on Vince McMahon. I'm like, yeah. And especially announcing it with this, like, you know, with all this shit going on, you're just like, okay.
Exactly. But I think that the things that we didn't know, or that were expanded on, or I guess confirmed, that I stated earlier, I think that's enough. I think that's what people like us were tuning in for. With, we didn't know about Gorilla Monsoon. I didn't know that Vince's mom diddled him. I didn't know any of that stuff. We all kind of just assumed that Shane was always having to fight for his father's approval, but I think the fact that Shane didn't say as much as his heart probably wanted to tells you so much more than what he could with words. And I think that's really powerful and strong and heartbreaking. Same with Stephanie, the way things ended with her having to just, I'm out, I'm done. The very little amount that she was in it, that's very telling as well. This is a damaged man with a damaged family. And he happens to be the creator of one of the things we love the most. So it takes me to one of the final questions of the documentary. What is Vince McMahon's legacy? And I'm going to follow that up with, or does he have a legacy now?
I gotta kind of echo what Tony Atlas and the best booker in the history of pro wrestling, but an absolute, I can't think of a better word for it, and we're rated R, so cunt of a human being.
it's weird because, like, the one person who, like, when you go to the scene, isn't they're like, I you're asking the wrong guy that question. No, it is. He's the greatest wrestling sports entertainment booker of all time. People have too far to go to catch up to Vince. Sure, you can have the biggest WrestleMania, Hunter, but you didn't fucking make WrestleMania. You only got to have the biggest because there was a WrestleMania. There's stars like Hulk Hogan. The man put meat in the seats. Like, he was able to draw, and he continued to do it decade after decade. And yeah, it sucks the most that we live in the world that all these powerful people are usually shit. They're shit human beings, but they're obviously good at that one fucking thing they do.
The thing for me, and I think I said it in our group chat, was I still, and I did when I finished it, and I still now view this documentary as a complete fucking waste of my time. But that's my fault. I expected too much from it. It's not Netflix's fault, and it's not the people who made it. That's my fault for overhyping it in my own little head.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that, because I really wanted it. I even said, like, for clippable moments, like, even for the pod, right? Like, I didn't find many of them. Like, I mean, just looking at Tony Atlas was enough for me. Like, the outfit. Like, straighten your tie, Tony, but don't have sleeves in your fucking shirt. But those moments, too, like, few and far between. Netflix is in that space. They get eyes on docuseries like that. They're very good at it. So, yeah, I bet it did do the number they wanted. It did justify the money they spent on it. I'm sure it was top 10 in wherever it was.
Just before we started recording, I saw a thing that had come out that it got 4.69 million viewers in its first 5 days.
Massive. What more can you ask for? And that's not even knowing the subscriptions that people watched it on, right? So like if you're watching it on that ad-based one, it's another huge win for them. So, but when they come out and say we have 280 million active Netflix subscribers, it's a huge fucking number. And only 4 million views on the thing, which is still great. Like if you compare it to TV ratings, even then, like it's massive and it's there forever. And like, I don't think now, like, especially with how the doc came out, like my concern was like, if this thing is really going to be what I want it to be, it's going to be weird for the WWE to show up on Netflix after it. But I think even Netflix knew, and obviously some say to be like, don't bury WWE. You've got to make it Vince. Like,
bury the guy.
Because we have too much at stake. Because we know that the number is going to be higher than 4 million views on stuff like Monday Night Raw, and the fact that Monday Night Raw is just on demand after. Pay-per-views are there in regions that don't have the other availability to watch it. It's massive for them. So yeah, I think they played it safe, but again, when Tom says it's a waste of time, I'm happy I watched it. I really am. Like I didn't feel disappointed like it was a failure. Like I told Scotty, if I gave it out of a 10 score, I said 6.5. It's not my favorite docuseries of all time, and it just sucks that I have so much knowledge about the man himself or those behind the scenes stories. But we knew going in, hey, this thing's on Netflix. This may not be targeted at the wrestling fan. And I think every major wrestling fan saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Blow me away because it was stuff you knew. But as the human, like Scotty bringing up the elements of Shane McMahon, sure, like there's your little sob story. There's the thing you got from the episode. But it's, to me, it made me more interested to be like, what's the dynamic like at home? Like, why wasn't that touched on more? Where's the stories of people going over for writing meetings when Vince is by the pool? That kind of shit. Not enough on like how Vince loved ribs. Like he loved to joke around. Like a lot of that wasn't touched on. So I think there was missed opportunities, and I know they had a lot of video footage. Like they had a ton.
I don't know if I'd characterize it as a missed opportunity. I think it's people willing to talk openly, whether they got that or not. We also don't know, like you had said when we talked on the phone the other night, Mike, that who knows what's on the cutting room floor? Who knows what didn't make it? We're reacting to what we saw on the documentary. So I honestly think that Vince and Linda and Shane and Stephanie probably didn't want to talk about what the home life is like. I could imagine, I would hope that the documentary directors and producers asked pro wrestlers about your first meeting with Vince and seeing if there were stories that were good enough to bring up for the final product. So I would love it if there was like a director's cut just for the stuff that's on the floor. Right. So I don't think we'll ever get it, to be honest with you. And just by the sounds of it, Vince wasn't happy with what he'd seen because he put out that statement a couple days beforehand. So it's whatever. I'm happy with it. I'm going to go back and watch it casually. I kind of had to crush it because I had to talk about it on the radio the day after it came out. So I just locked right in and watched it. And I have the same opinions as you guys as, yeah, we knew 90 to 95% of that stuff, but I'm going to stand by how I felt, where the 5 to 10% that we didn't know, or that it really hit home with me, really does speak volumes as to the person that Vincent Kennedy McMahon is. And that's not something that I don't think should just be brushed over with, it wasn't a good doc, which I'm seeing a lot of online.
But going from missed opportunity, I'm just talking us, the really diehard wrestling fan, right? Like, it seems like they knew. They're like, okay, like we have these guys who will probably know, so let's ignore them. Like, let's not cater to them. They know. And it did feel like that.
Yeah, but on the other hand, like Tom said, like what James has said is like, I don't understand what the big deal is about the curtain call kind of thing, right? So they, and when you break it down like that, because I was very curious about what James thought when Tom said that James was going to watch it. I was very curious on his outsider look, and it looks like they may have missed the mark on the non-fan or maybe even the lightly casual fan of really breaking things down. But then I think you're adding another half hour to 45
you
minutes
can't
for every
teach
episode.
Like 50 years of professional wrestling to people. Like, that's not what this is. Like, it's still a series about a man who just so happens to be the one of the, if not the most important man in wrestling history.
The most interesting part for me about the whole thing was James's reactions to things. And it was things like he'd never seen Hogan in WCW. First time, like a clip from Hogan in WCW popped up, it was like, holy shit, he's tiny.
Yeah. Like, leaned out, right? Leaned
what out. Happened? Yeah. Like skinny Hogan when he was in the NWO and he looked old. And so it was just things like that that I found very interesting. I can't think of another example off the top of my head, but
one thing that I, as a fan, had hoped for but that didn't get addressed on the podcast was the Macho Man story. There's the longstanding rumor that Macho Man may have had an incident with a young Stephanie McMahon, and that's why he was gone from the WWF. Vince hated him, never wanted to bring him back, and never did bring him back. It's such a, you know, it's in there for like the giant rumor mill of wrestling. And Macho Man's not here to confirm, deny, or defend himself in any way. Stephanie and Vince are there. I've never really heard one way or the other than the fact that it did happen or it didn't happen, just from, you know, rumor and hearsay.
Well, I think it's pretty much confirmed that it did. Because you remember Randy Savage's valet in
Gorgeous
WCW,
George?
Gorgeous George.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she did a virtual signing about 2 years ago. And she flat out said in that signing, like, yeah, Randy told me all about it. Like, this is exactly, that's exactly what everyone thinks happened is why Randy has never been back.
Which also, too, like, take that for what it's worth.
Exactly.
From anyone in that industry, right? Like, if it keeps your head above water or it keeps you relevant, they'll do that kind of thing. Yeah. We've seen it time and time again. But,
and the only reason I put any weight behind it at all is because, well, they were married for years.
Can I ask, like, was she sober at the time and level-headed and clear-headed when she was doing the signing? I don't know much about her, what she's up to these days kind of thing, right? So I just don't know. But
I would give you 100 guesses of what she does for a job now, and I can guarantee you wouldn't get it.
Oof, all of them are filthy. In my guesses, they're all
Walmart
filthy.
Greeter.
No, she is a double semi driver.
Oh, wow. Good for her getting out there, working the big rigs. Yeah.
Go ahead, Tom.
I was just going to say, she was also the most pre-ordered guest that virtual signing agent ever had.
Wow, that's wild.
Another takeaway too, Austin. Stone Cold Steve Austin with the biggest flub in the history of flubs in that documentary. I don't believe in CTE. You broke your neck taking a pile driver. You're quite literally dropped on your head.
The thing is, Steve's probably the only person who could say something so fucking stupid and get away with it.
Like, I know the internet backlash wasn't crazy because, like, look what you're coming up against in the doc, right?
We all were just like, oh, fuck's sake, Steve.
I know, like, hearing that, I'm like, fuck, no way you just said that.
I literally said, Steve, I love you. Why are you saying this? It's not something to believe in or not believe in. It's fact. It's science. There's tons of proof that this is a real thing. Now, a part of me thinks maybe that's a little just old school, but a little bit of fear as well. He may have it. Maybe that's why he made that statement. We don't know. But Steve, come on.
He's just a dumbass.
It could be one of those. You're just kind of an idiot, but, you know, go back to Instagramming with your kitty cats and you'll be all right.
It sounds like you were dropped on your head when you say stupid shit like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, can you imagine if Bruce had said that?
Oh.
Or even Triple H, or Sean, or
anyone who's tied to the fucking business?
I think Austin is the only one who could have said it and the fans would have just laughed.
Yeah,
It just
he just now, he says it so confidently. He's like, I'm just not a CTE guy. Just don't believe in it. And then he goes on with whatever he's talking about. And it's quite baffling. We love you, Steve. I'm sure at some point someone has reached out to you and say, well, Steve, I'm going to pass along some scientific information to you that might change your mind, might not, but we just want you to have it.
Well, so. He's got CTE, can't read anymore.
But that was pretty wild. Is there anything, any other moments that are sticking out you guys want to throw out there before we wrap it up?
I don't have a moment, but I do have a question.
Sure.
So in 6 months, 9 months time, No Chance in Hell hits on Raw and he comes tottering out on the stage, old Vinnie Mac. Does he get a pop?
Of course. It's recognizable music.
It comes back to the 10 bell salute conversation. It Vince fucking McMahon.
The thing is, the way I look at it is Vince wrestling fans have the longest memory in the world. We don't forget anything. But you give me a decent surprise, I'm a pop.
Mm-hmm.
And Vinnie Mac on WWE TV would probably be the biggest surprise they can ever do again.
Agree. And I think he gets
allegations came out and they're like, Vince McMahon is coming on SmackDown.
And the crowd went nuts.
Of course they did. What, it also sucks too, because it paints a picture about wrestling fans.
It does.
I had this conversation actually with James. I was like, wrestling fans don't care. I want to watch the wrestling. This guy's an asshole, but I'm not here to say that this guy's an asshole. I'm here to watch the wrestling. And that doesn't mean that we think everything he did was great and Janelle Grant should just shut up, because absolutely not.
No.
But
guess what? All the actors in Hollywood, pretty shitty people. They're still in movies I like.
Like Brad Pitt?
When Vince McMahon, the fucking character, walks out, if someone's editing the doc too, they're like, they know it's predetermined, but they like the character. They like the fucking spectacle. I do. I do. I buy into that world. Like, I can suspend disbelief for hours to be like, unless it's Monday Night Raw, I'll do it exactly in 20 minutes. But you can buy into it. I don't need to know their real name. Sure, I'll go and dig that information up because I'm interested in it. But when they're out there, they're just that character in that storyline created for the viewer. It's fucking fun.
You know, that's one of my biggest wrestling pet peeves, when fans will be like, well, Demi did this. Demi didn't do shit. Rhea fucking Ripley did.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he gets a pop, but I would believe that the booing would start by the time he got to the ring. And he would just feed into it. Like, he would just be like, yeah, they're booing Mr. McMahon. They're not booing Vince. They're booing Mr. McMahon. That's what they're
his music
to do,
so. Hits and he's doing the strut. They're booing him. He fucking loves it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Reaction's a reaction. He knows it.
Before we wrap up here, I do just want to answer my own question on Vince's legacy. And I'm at the point now where I feel like Vince doesn't have a legacy. I've thought about this so much since last week. And I understand Tony Atlas's side of it and anyone else's, but if any one of these allegations gets proven and he gets charged, Vince McMahon becomes just the guy on the network that has a warning before every show. And we know that they do that with Benoit. They'll never reference him on TV again. They won't blur him out or anything like that, but on the network, you'll get a warning and that'll be it. And this will now be just a family business that was built to a billionaire company. That's how I feel. I don't know if that'll happen, but I just feel like if even one of those things happens and gets charged, then it's over. There is no more legacy. And it's up to Hunter and Stephanie to just keep on trucking. So that's what I think. I cannot wait to hear what everyone else is thinking after it's been a week since the show's been released, if you've watched all the episodes, look, if you're a wrestling fan, you're listening to this. I know there's a very small amount of people that aren't pro wrestling fans, but still listen. And we appreciate you guys so much for not being pro wrestling fans and listening. We would love to find out what you guys think if you watch the Vince McMahon, the Mr. McMahon documentary on Netflix. Hit us up on our socials. If you know one of us personally, let us know. We would love to talk about it and just discuss your thoughts on the show next week. If you want to hit us up on the socials, you can message us anywhere at In My House Pod. That's where you'll find us. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We're also on Spotify, YouTube, and Apple Podcasts. Comment, subscribe, like, all that fun stuff there. I've been waiting for this since the second I started hit and play on episode one. I enjoyed the documentary. It was what it was, and it made for a great conversation like this, which is what I love even more. Guys, great show.
Wonderful show. Scotty, this is where you'll pipe in any Def Rebel song.
Don't you fucking dare.
And for me, Monday Night Mike, and of course Scotty Villa, and Def Rebel's number one fan, UK Tom.
Don't
this
make
has been
me...
the In My House Pro Wrestling Podcast.
Don't make me drop the C-bomb twice in one episode. Welcome to my house. Play that music too loud. Show me what you do now. We don't have to go out. Welcome to my house. Welcome to my house. It's my house. Yowie wowie.